There's a concert pair coming up with the Coeur d'Alene Symphony, and that is Friday evening and Saturday afternoon, Friday at 7:30, Saturday at 2 o'clock at the Kroc Center in Coeur d'Alene. And it is it's a wonderful tradition that orchestra does of a good classical concert with some really significant major classical music and then some holiday-oriented music. And the person who gets to be right in the middle of that's Jan Palant. Good morning, Jan.
Good morning.
And again, you've been around long enough that you got to kind of design it. And so when you thought about Christmas and you thought about, okay, there's going to be the things with an obvious holiday and Christmas implication. We'll talk about that in a minute. But then you needed a good classical piece. What went through your head when you tried to decide what to play there?
Right. Well, first of all, I thought this is a time for holidays, snow, nice atmosphere, people are buying presents. So I was thinking, why shouldn't we move for a second to Prague, the place I'm originally from, and see if we can experience a little of the life from there. And it's true, the Coeur d'Alene Symphony would typically play first half of the holiday concert with the fully classical program, and then the second half would be a little more in the Christmas, in the real Christmas atmosphere. So Mozart is, in my opinion, a composer that is very serious. At the same time, it gives a lot of enjoyment, a lot of possibilities to put us into the holiday mood. So I think it was a pretty easy decision to start with a very energetic live music. So this is Figaro's Overture by Mozart as the first piece, and then followed by Prague Symphony, which is Mozart's Symphony number 38. And why it's titled Prague, that's an interesting question. I would say we wouldn't necessarily hear so many tunes from Czech Republic's traditional songs. Mozart was obviously Austrian composer. However, Mozart did have very close connection to Prague.
Yeah, why? And why? What was the reason for that love affair?
Yeah, he liked the city. He liked the architecture. He liked the people. He always said, "My people in Prague, they like me. They understand me."
And, so, and why? So now, why did the people like Mozart?
Well, I think it was because his music was so much coming from the heart, and at those times, at the 18th century, people in the Middle Europe, they were sometimes struggling. There were some wars, there were some different, I would say, government opinions on things. And Mozart music was in Prague itself at that time very much giving you new life. I have to say that in the 18th century, Czech Republic didn't use the native language Czech. It was more German language. And it is possible that I mean, we need to understand that the Middle Europe at the 18th century was more unified. It wasn't like Czech, Germany, Austria. It was more combined. And why Mozart was beloved? I think he was also very much, Mozart himself was a very spontaneous person. And people in Czech Republic, I think I mentioned it before, they liked it. They liked to really just sit, you know, in the restaurant, drink a beer, and just enjoy the life, if I exaggerate. So we can mention Mozart's Don Giovanni, Figaro's Marriage, and many other works that are bringing so much life to the life at those times in Europe. So this is Mozart, the first half. And after intermission, we'll talk about it. Okay,
we'll talk about that later. Let's keep doubling down on Mozart and Prague because it is so true. And even one of the little things I've liked about the Prague Symphony, he left. He clearly told them in Prague that he was leaving Austria behind, leaving Vienna behind because he didn't do the Viennese requirement of a minuet.
That's right. That's right. That's right. This Symphony number 38, titled Prague, has surprisingly only three movements, And what is also interesting, there are no clarinets. The reason for that is Mozart was really looking for kind of soft sound. You know, the orchestra at that time for this piece was musicians of 25, 30 people. It wasn't a big group. So it was very natural for him to make this piece very short, at the same time enjoyable. And the reason why he skipped the menuet, the third movement, is he wanted to simply keep it not traditional in traditional way. He wanted to explore things. He wanted to give a new views on things. Mm. We know that Mozart was enjoying doing jokes. He would surprise people, a little bit like Haydn. Sure. Yeah. So it's true. This movement, I mean, this symphony has only three movements, but each of them are so different, so contrasting. I would say almost like coming from different centuries. The first movement is has the similar tune like Don Giovanni, starting with a very dramatic moment, kind of almost scary tunes. Then, 25, 30 measures later, the movement is speeding up, is becoming faster, allegro. Maybe you'll have chance to listen in a second.
Yeah, and let's do it. Yeah, because about that first few bars, it does start, as you say, quite sternly, and yet then it just starts changing, doesn't it?
Changing. I think this was the idea of performing operas at that time, that it would start with the slow movement, slow with the slow speed. The overture, I mean, before the operas, we will have overtures, and the overtures would start with the slow speed, then fast speed, and then slow. So it was like ABA, this kind of idea. So the same with the symphony, with the movement. Again, it starts in very kind of, I would say, tragic, scary atmosphere, but it changes so quickly in a good mood. Why? We will need to ask Mozart.
And then let's take it. We're going to, because we are going to pick it up right where the Allegro, after this somewhat stern opening, but stern but transitional opening happens. What always fascinates me about the music we're about to hear is that it's kind of not a normal tune. It's something that rises out of something and goes somewhere, but it's not just a pa 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 sort of tune.
Yes, it's it has always direction towards somewhere, but it never ends. It's like a little bit music of Wagner, of course, Wagner is a different composer.
No, but I know where you're going, yeah.
Yes, with the music of Wagner, we expect it goes somewhere and suddenly it goes somewhere else. Yeah. And it's never-ending process of building these phrases. So yeah, exactly as you said, it's the same thing. We are building the phrases in this Mozart's piece and we feel like we are almost there, but suddenly it changes to completely different idea, different passage. And this is something that makes it so interesting. So many different moods and so many, I would say, contrasting passages, and we just don't expect that, and that makes this piece so special and so interesting.
So let's hear a minute or two of that, however long it feels, so that we can really hear the journey that Mozart's on.
Thank you.
Wow. So much material. So big a story was already told.
So many themes, so many motifs, so many elements. Also, the middle voices are important. Of course, we hear a lot of things going on in the first violins, in the flute, in the oboes. At the same time, important are the harmonies, the change of harmonies in this piece. It's like organ in the church. We would have singer who would think this main melody, but the organ has to be giving these harmonies, and this is exactly for me happening in this piece. Yes.
Yeah. Well, so that's simply the first movement of the Mozart Prague Symphony, just a teeny sense of it, but the beauty of and the everything. I kind of run out of words of talking about it. Mm-hmm. I'm talking with Jan Palat about the Mozart Prague Symphony, which is the major piece on the first half of Friday night and Saturday afternoon's concert. Then Mozart's slow movements are so interesting, where we shouldn't maybe even call them slow movements, call them interior movements, because that's the point. In the whole range of musical performance, there's so many different tempos that can be taken. Do you find that when you're learning you're studying like a Mozart interior movement, how do you find the tempo that feels right at that moment for you?
Exactly. To find the right tempo, especially in Mozart piece, is very, very, very important. The way how I work at home is that I basically open the score every day and find out what's the tempo. And the next day I might have different tempo, the next day another tempo. But hopefully in 1 month, two, maybe 3 months, I will realize that I have 3, 4, 5 days that I have the same tempo of the same of the piece. So that's the moment when hopefully I have the tempo in my body and I can go and work with the orchestras.
Because it feels right.
Yes, yes, yes. Mm-hmm. However, that doesn't mean that will always happen in that tempo, because there are so many circumstances that the conductor has to consider. Also, what kind of mood the orchestra is, what kind of hall we are performing, etc., etc. So the very, very, very final tempos might sometimes happen also during the rehearsals. But it's true, the conductor has to have the clear tempo and be ready for the flexibility. Again, in this piece, in the Prague Symphony of Mozart, it's very crucial to find the right tempo. In my opinion, if it is too fast, it might give a good impression to the audience, but at the same time, we will lose this clarity of the sound. So it's not necessary to always play super fast tempos in Mozart pieces and at the same time super slow tempos. It's basically the question of making sure that the orchestra is breathing and making the right steps for creating the climaxes in this piece. Also, the climaxes are so important. If we don't think ahead what's happening ahead of the climax of each piece, it's also not going to make a great impact. So many, many elements, many details that one has to be aware in this piece. It sounds like it's easy music to listen to, to play, but it's not always.
Yeah. Well, let's have a little experiment. I don't even know how much these tempos are or aren't going to agree, but we're going to hear just a few bars of two different recordings, and then we'll come back in and get your impression of the two different approaches that we heard from two different recordings. So here we go. Here's number one. And here's number two. Nothing's completely fair, but just from that little bit, what did you feel about those two that we heard?
Well, I think both recordings have a lot of life. There is a lot of music, live music we can hear and see. For me, I would say what I always care when I listen to any concerts or when I have chance to listen to my colleague's recording is if we can really hear the phrases are going somewhere. I can immediately say if the music is just being played like a machine, like a routine, if the conductor is just beating, you know, and that's not ideal. So I would say the first version that we just heard is kind of more going for huge rounded sound. I can hear this movement beating in 6/8 measure. There are also possibilities to understand this movement as being conducted in two, which means the music is more flowing, more moving forward. I did personally like the tempo, something between both recordings. Sounds great to me. My tempo is something between both of them. So these are always questions. Shall we perform the pieces in the similar way at those times? Obviously, the second version we just had chance to hear is more coming from the traditional early time. The first version was more, I would say, romantic, more vibrato, more expressiveness.
Well, the second version is original instruments, one of those things, which is why it was also a lower pitch. Right. But anyway, that was the dead giveaway. But anyway, I digress.
I think the ideal thing is to go maybe for both, which means to respect the ways of articulations, phrases coming from those times. However, we are living in the 21st century, so we have a lot of technical improvements and abilities. So I personally like vibratos, a rounded sound in Mozart, and I like to conduct more into this piece, which means that the tempo is maybe a little bit moving sometimes and slowing down. I wouldn't stay necessarily in the same tempo, even though it's not written in the score. Sometimes we can hear at Cortland Symphony Orchestra's concert that the tempos might be a little changed, and it's not in one steady tempo even is written. So there are a lot of flexibilities, a lot of movements around the tempo.
So there's some thoughts on the Prague Symphony, and we'll let the last movement take care of itself for the purpose of people who get to come and enjoy Mozart finishing it out. But just a lovely possibility, and I gather you and the orchestra have had a fine time really getting into this piece, haven't you?
Yes. We have very good rehearsals and very nice attitude, very nice working process. So I think all Cortland Symphony artists, including myself, are very excited for the concert. And I think we are like the strong, I would say, soccer team. We are ready to jump on the stage and score the goals.
Oh, good. And so that's the first half. So now I'll ask you to talk about how you brought in the more traditional holiday sense on the second half of this concert.
Well, the board of directors and I, we wanted to make sure that the second half also has something famous. So Tchaikovsky's Nutcracker is most probably one of the most popular, I would say, holiday atmosphere. I would say composition. We can hear a lot of Nutcrackers being performed around nowadays, especially in this time. So I don't think I have to tell too much about this wonderful piece. And then we will have sing-alongs, Larry Anderson, Finnegan, Christmas sing-along, with the North Idaho Youth Symphony members.
Oh, nice.
So this will be, again, huge, large orchestra.
And it gives a family sense to it.
Exactly. Yeah. So this will also give opportunity to audience to join the orchestra, to sing along, and just spontaneously be making music all together in the hall.
Now, the Nutcracker that you're doing, are you doing the classic traditional Nutcracker suite of the miniature march and then the character dances and then the waltz?
Exactly. The classical suite, yeah. Which is movements.
Such a gratifying suite. So that's the concert. That's Friday night, 7:30, Saturday afternoon, 2 o'clock at Kroc Center, the regular home that you folks have used, although you did try out a new hall early this fall. Talk about your experience of when Garrison Keillor came to town and you tried out playing in a different hall.
Oh, that was a wonderful experience. Yes, Garrison Keillor's concert happened on September 14th at Northside Hall College at the Schuller Auditorium, and the hall was sold out. It was an amazing experience. It was nice to work with Garrison. And I think it was another very important concert. I think the Cortland Symphony Orchestra did again prove that it's one of the most important orchestras in this area. And the news is that the Cortland Symphony is planning to move to North Idaho College next season, and there will be 2 concerts per cycle. And as we know, NIC has approximately 1,200 seats, so this is definitely another big chapter coming up.
Challenge and opportunity.
I like the hall very much, and I think it's a very good size for the symphonic orchestra. It also gives opportunity for exploring the audience. We have more and more audience coming to our concert, so there is this need to have more seats for the audience.
Well, we'll look forward to all of these changes, this growth with Coeur d'Alene Symphony and its conductor, Jan Palant. Thanks a lot for coming in, Jan.
Thank you.